And now, live from New York City via Los Angeles, California, it's time for The View from Over Here with the man who has a view for all seasons, your host, Stan Weisleder.
Stan,
take it away or not to take it away.
You never look better in your life.
Hey, it says by way of New York. Well, you know something? I'm in New York right now.
Is that a miracle or is that a miracle?
Living it up. And just think, 100 years ago, this was impossible.
Actually, at about 30 years ago, it was almost impossible for us to do a live broadcast over the Internet.
Yeah, but they had radio back then.
Oh,
and
did
telephones.
They? Did they?
Yeah, I remember. Don't you?
No, not really.
Yeah, you're too young. You wouldn't remember.
Anyway, Stan, tell us, where the hell are you?
What are we on? Hey, listen, the weather here in New York has been great. And I interviewed Joe Franklin yesterday, so we'll play him back in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, that's if you taped it okay. Have you?
If I pressed the right button.
Right, did you?
I pressed off when I should have pressed on.
But by the way, have you listened to it yet?
No, I don't know how to press the right button, and I don't want to mess it up. So I'll let Eric or somebody in the studio check it out when I get back. But you know something? Malcolm, you're my producer and wingman. And I know, wait a minute, mustn't forget the Barry part, Malcolm Barry Berman.
Yeah, that's correct.
You're always saying that I'm too serious and should cover something light or whimsical. But there's not much happening out there that is light or whimsical. So let me tell you what is on my mind. I've noticed a number of reporters on TV as of late questioning various politicians, and it doesn't matter if they're running for office or not, and the question being asked is, did they vote for President Obama? Now, whatever these politicians think or don't think about Obama, it is really no one's business who they voted for. Why do you think ballot voting takes place behind a closed screen? Because it is no one's business who you vote for. The only time it is everyone's business is when a politician votes on anything that might be a law, a regulation, or if it involves the funding for something or other. And that is in the public record.
Yes, but you know what the maneuvering is since Obama's polls are really down right now. The Republicans want to force the Democrats to back Obama, thereby getting some of the negative press that Obama is getting. It's as simple as that. They don't really care, who the person voted for. They just want the other person to, get some of that negative reaction. You know what I mean?
Anyways, so be it.
C'est la vie.
Hey, I got something else for you, Malcolm.
This was sent
to me by a friend, and this subject has been thoroughly snoped. You know what Snopes is, right?
I have no idea.
You could check it out on Google.
Okay, I'll Google.
This stuff didn't just start a few years ago, but has been going on since before our country became a country. Back then, the Barbary Coast, which consisted of the Islamic nations of Algiers, Morocco, Tripoli, and Tunis, the leader of which was Tripoli, they were a prime concern to all seafaring nations that sailed the Mediterranean and the North Atlantic because of the Muslim piracy and subsequent demands for ransom and tribute.
Sounds familiar.
When the U.S. first declared its independence, they lost the protection provided by Great Britain, and by 1800 was paying to the Pasha of Tripoli more than 20% of its annual revenues, all because of the same BS that they espouse today. In 1801, they demanded of Thomas Jefferson a lump sum of 225 thou, plus another 25 thou per year until further notice. Jefferson told the Pasha of Tripoli, that is, what he could do with his request. The Pasha then cut down the American flag at the consulate in Tripoli, and the Barbary Coast, all of those countries, declared war on the U.S. Jefferson had enough of the Pasha's bullying after that, and he sent a squadron of frigates, not frigates. That's a boat, Malcolm, along with a complement of Marines to teach the nations of the Barbary Coast a lesson that they would not soon forget. And that's why the Marine Corps hymn includes the words, "To the shores of Tripoli."
But where are the halls of Montezuma?
Yeah, well, that's the next program.
Oh, okay.
America and Thomas Jefferson always had a tradition of religious tolerance. Unlike fundamental Islam, which is predicated on supremacism, that actually mandates violence against all non-believers. And because of that, and in lieu of that, or in addition to that, my closing thoughts on the subject are as follows. Today, America and the rest of the world are doing the job of ISIS by slitting their own throats with a politically correct knife.
Could you get more specific? I'm not sure what you mean by that.
Not sure I mean what?
By that, why are we cutting our own throats?
By not doing anything fast enough or strong enough.
But what are we supposed to do? See, I'm looking at the situation. The only way that I could I don't see what you can do about it, aside from maybe trying to isolate these people in one area. You can't change people's minds. You can either kill them or isolate them.
Or you could have, you could have absolutely nothing to do with them.
Well, supposedly nothing. We aren't the, well, as far as the terrorists, we're not supposed to be dealing with them.
And anybody that espouses that kind of nonsense, I wouldn't have them killed here. I would have them deported back to where they came from.
Well, let's say they are native-born Americans. And
then they're committing a form of treason.
Well, yeah, but you have to try them in court before you deport them. Well, you can't even deport them. You just have to put them in jail.
You can't deport them if they're an American citizen, but you could try them on treason if they do, in fact, commit treason.
That's true. But the thing that which I also...
But anyway, listen, Malcolm, there are, the people in Washington are a lot smarter than us, and they have all the answers, and they know what to do. We'll keep an eye on it, and we'll watch it.
The people in Washington are smarter than us.
Well, of course they are. They know all the answers.
Oh, okay. If you say so, it must be.
The people in Washington, ever since I can remember, have always been the smartest, no matter what they did or didn't do.
Well, it's interesting. Well, they are earning the money right now, so maybe they are smarter. And we're paying them.
Yes, we're paying them, absolutely. Us and everyone else in the country. But anyway, let's not dwell on that, because that is a subject that we could go on forever and ever and ever, and there are probably no clear black or white, but a thousand shades of gray in between.
That's true. Now, I have some things for you that I wanted your comments about. Now, do you know that I think it's Google and Facebook are offering their female employees to freeze their eggs? Have you heard that story?
I hadn't heard that. I must have missed that one.
What they're doing, they say men outnumber women by more than 2-1 at Apple and Facebook, at Apple.
But maybe those companies.
Yeah, but the technology companies may have found a way to keep more women on board. Facebook has begun, and Apple is planning to begin paying for female employees to freeze their eggs. So
then
this,
what?
So this way, women, let's say 25 to 30, do not have to reproduce. They have their eggs frozen, so when they're ready to have children, they have their eggs right there. And I guess young eggs are better than old eggs.
But doesn't an egg have to be somehow, interacted with male sperm in order to...
Right, well, then they can pick this... They can find some sperm, and they have frozen sperm that's united with their eggs. And I guess they have frozen children.
Without knowing where the those goodies come from, you don't know what you'll get.
Well, they can pick their mate. They can have their spouse might be
Malcolm,
able to freeze their sperm.
That's nonsense. In a couple of years, I don't know how many, we'll be able to reproduce the egg and the sperm according to specific order, okay, genetically engineered in the lab, pop it into a an incubator like you put a preemie into, and in 9 months you have a fully grown kid, no pain, nothing. There you go. Boom, pops right out of the oven.
Actually, I've seen the movie.
Oh, there was a movie about that? Well, okay, there's probably been a few of them that I didn't see.
Are you writing a script on that?
No. No, but I have to tell you something, and I'm sure you know about this. If you can imagine something, whatever, no matter how outlandish it is, eventually you can make it happen. Because I have to tell you, the science fiction from when I was a kid, we've gone way, way, way past it.
Do you ever think we're going to have nuclear submarines? Or
when I was a little kid, we didn't have anything nuclear except when the A-bomb went off. And when I first heard of a nuclear submarine, I said, well, how does that A-bomb translate into
I don't think we're going to fly to the moon. That's too far-fetched.
Well, we may not, but...
And we'll colonize the moon. And we're... But anyway, let's get back to the important things. What are your impressions of New York? How long? Where are you staying?
I'm staying at the Manhattan Club.
And where's that?
We're members here, and it's very nice. It's like a little apartment, has everything in it, and you're a short walk from just about everything.
And when was the last time you were in Manhattan?
Oh, about a year and a half ago. Yeah.
Any changes?
None that I notice, except maybe some new restaurants coming up, some new skyscrapers with those big tower things on top that lift up the girders. There's always construction here.
I have to
tell you, there's one thing that's really unique to this city, the sounds at night. You always hear police sirens at night or ambulance sirens at night. I've never heard it in any other place. But in New York, you hear it, no matter how high up you are on the building. You hear those sounds throughout the night, and they are really, really part and parcel of New York City.
Well, it's funny. I've been living now in Los Angeles more than half of my life. But if anybody ever asked me where I'm from, I'm a New Yorker. Well, I speak like one.
Yeah, well.
But somehow... Los Angeles or Southern California has not enveloped me.
Let's not keep talking about boring stuff. What about our guest today? Is he on board?
Yeah, but he's going to be on by the telephone. We'll get him right after the break because we're going to have to come up to a break soon. So I think we're going to have to continue this so-called boring stuff. Well, what are you in New York for?
Well, doing some interviews, I wanted to nail down Joe Franklin, which I did. And tonight we're going to a special party on a yacht off Lower Manhattan. They're filming for Bravo TV there, so they had to check us up, down, and sideways, whether or not we're acceptable for them. And that's about it. And then I head off to Florida. I'll be doing an interview there of somebody, a writer. And then another one will be a movie producer, and I'll get all of that stuff back to the station on time.
So you're a busy young man. Anyway, who's our guest coming up?
Oh, our guest. His name is Dave Beagle, okay? Dave Beagle wrote a very interesting book. The book is called Baby Girls.
My travel with the
hook. About babies, I'll tell you that.
My travels with
a
hooker.
It's a very unusual kind of book. I don't think anyone like that has been done before, not that I know of. And Dave Beagle, you know, this guy really likes to travel.
Stan, we have to wrap it up. We'll be back in a few minutes on CRNTalk.com. Are you still there?
I'm here.
Yeah, that's a perfect music for us with George Gershwin.
And what do you think? I'm in New York, and for those of you who don't know who I am, this is Stan Weisleder on The View from over here. And The View today is from New York to accompany the music that you're listening to.
Do you have a view from your window?
Yeah, but right now I have the curtains shut. But the view is nice. It's nice and sunny, too. But let's get to our guest.
Okay. I'll let you do the intros.
Okay. Our guest today is Dave Beakel. It's B-E-A-K-E-L. And this guy really likes to travel on the wild side. He wrote a book called Baby Girls, but it ain't about babies. What he did was he picked up, or maybe it was the other way around, a hooker and a junkie, and the three of them toured the countryside. And he's here in person to share his excellent adventures with us.
Excuse me, Stan. He's not in person. He's on the phone, but he's live.
Well, what's the difference? The people who are out there, they don't know the difference.
Yes, they do, because they only see me in the studio with
all right. Anyway,
the invisible MC.
I promise you.
Dave, are you there?
I'm here.
All right, Dave, you have to tell us what prompted you to get into that situation. And then you're going to tell us what prompted you to write the book.
Well, I suppose I was somewhat adrift in my life. I was getting ready to move back out here to California, and I stopped at a 7-Eleven in Albuquerque, and these two lovely gals came up to my window, and one of the gals had lived in the town we moved to in New Mexico when I was 13, and I just decided to help them out and welcome them into my truck and into my life. And they took me on such an incredible adventure, and I got to see firsthand the life that they live on the streets. That it's so incredible the way they survive. By the time I had made it these adventures with them, I was like, I got to write a book about this. I mean, and it was just nonstop action. And they were real friends, and they protected me and watched out for me. I thought I was protecting them, but apparently it was the other way around. And it was definitely a good experience.
So you actually lived out on the streets with them?
No, I sort of provided for them. Like, I got motels and stuff like that so that we had a place to stay. Like, I was going to get a motel that night anyways, but then they didn't, like, con me into doing that, but, like, I didn't have any problem, you know, providing a shelter and stuff for a couple weeks. And it was more than worthwhile because they were kind of like sisters.
How long did this journey go on for?
It was 3 weeks in total.
So did you provide the place for the hooker to ply her trades?
No, I was never there during any of the more intimate aspects of Michelle's life. Like, she'd take off from our room and say, well, I'm going to go earn some money, and we don't expect you to pay for anything or to pay for everything. And Sandra and I would be like, wait, she's going to go earn money.
You mean Dave, she's did you guys all share the same room?
Yeah, all three of us. And they were doing drugs in the room and like smoking crack cocaine. And I couldn't figure out why I was feeling so awake all the time. And it gradually dawned on me that it was from sitting in this room, breathing in the fumes from the drugs they were using.
Why did the journey end after 3 weeks?
Well, Sandra kept disappearing on us, and then Michelle was becoming increasingly dangerous to be as a friend. And was jeopardizing my life and future by pulling in right next to police to go pick up her heroin and leaving me cringing in the passenger seat while these three police cars were staring at me like, what are you doing at this apartment complex at 3 a.m. and where there are known heroin dealers? And I had to set myself free from Michelle.
I can imagine.
Feared for your life.
Anyway, wait, Dave, hold on to those thoughts because I don't know if you can hear the music, but we have to take a station break. You're listening to CRNTalk.com, The View from Over Here, with Stan Weisleder in New York, and Dave Buechel on the phone with us talking about his experience with a hooker and an addict, and his driving through from, I think, I don't know where it was, from Albuquerque to L.A. Anyway, we'll be right back. Okay, Stan, wake up. You're
I'm
on.
I'm up.
I don't know. I can't see you. You're invisible. I think you took the Claude Rain pills.
Well,
I'm looking straight at you, and you're not there.
Later on, The View from Over Here, and the view is New York, right now and here. Dave, question for you.
Hello?
Dave, are you up?
David, yes.
Are you still in contact with your travel mates?
No, I haven't spoken with them since in the past 3 years. I don't know how to reach them. I might be able to reach Sandra's brother, though.
Are you interested in reaching them?
Yes, I definitely would like to let them know about this book and to maybe see if they'd be willing to sign off on the rights so that I can include their real names.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, but, by the way, if you're going to make it into a movie,
that'd be cool.
Now, my question:
they'll get some money out of it, maybe, and maybe they could change their lives.
I would be very happy to share whatever proceeds.
Do they want to change their lives? That's the question.
I know Sandra does. Michelle was kind of living her life out on the streets by choice, but I mean, I imagine that if she could break free from the addiction, that she'd soon realize that it's a lot nicer being sober than being on drugs.
Now the hooker was not on drugs.
No, they both were. They were both.
Okay. Yeah, because most of the stories are.
How old were they?
24 and 28.
Now, is a hooker by choice, or?
Yeah, she chose to live that life so that she could support her drug habit.
Now, question: Did you partake of any of the carnal knowledge with them, or were you completely above board?
Basically, from the very beginning, I felt quite a crush for Sandra, and there was a kind of a romance was developing between us, but she had a boyfriend who was in jail, and I didn't feel right about, I know that this Hell's Angels guy and these other people were trying to get me to go all the way with her, but I had reservations about that, but I definitely felt a romance for the gal that was not a hooker, and then the gal that was a hooker, like, we were very much like best friends. Like, I really enjoyed her sense of humor and stuff, but, and I mean, there were some sultry moments, but the entire book's PG-13, but...
You should try to seek them out to let them know about the book.
I suppose I could I could try to start out by reaching Sandra's brother, and maybe I could, if I went out to Albuquerque, I know the areas where they hung out, and I could go searching for them.
Well, where did you pick them up in Albuquerque? Where did you drop them off?
Well, I didn't. They both kind of just said, Michelle was, Sandra kind of whisked me away from Michelle. And then one night Sandra said she was going to go meet this other guy, and then she just vanished on me, and she'd already vanished on us at several other points. And
you think they're still alive?
Yeah, I definitely am sure of that.
Well, you have to seek them out and tell them now that they're famous.
Or infamous.
I'd love to. That's definitely something I'd like to do.
Now, how long ago was this?
It's 3 years ago.
Yeah. Are you going to try to reprise a certain journey again by picking up some more people in Los Angeles and taking them to Albuquerque?
That would be interesting. I've met gals like that here in Santa Cruz, especially. Like I ended up meeting a lot of people that when I don't know why I always end up with these illicit relations and stuff. And then the gal I'm with now is a lesbian, and so I.
Hey Malcolm, once we post this interview, he may get a lot of offers.
Well, as I say, we're interested in getting the movie rights to your story.
Nice. I'm very interested.
Well, contact after the show. Contact Stan, and he's very much involved, and we'll do a treatment on it. But it seems like a fascinating story. I don't know how many men would do what you did. I mean, I think everybody would be tempted to, but they're a bit frightened. I know
you
I would
the big
be.
Big question, Malcolm and Dave. The big question here is, how much do you adhere to the truth? And do you add to it to make it a little bit more adventuresome? And then do you do it as a comedy situation or as a realistic, sad kind of story? That's really the big issue.
Well, it's very much, I don't know if comedy, there's a lot of humor in it. And it's very upbeat. And,
Dave,
you know,
I didn't read the book. You have to send me a copy. I will read it, and then I'll give you my advice on it.
I'd love to.
Well, you're in town, right? I mean, you're in the L.A. area.
Yeah, and I am smacking myself in the head right now because I wanted to be in Sunland this morning, and I got like an hour and a half of sleep last night, and I'm trying to get letters off to agents and stuff.
David, that's no excuse.
Dave, does your press agent, Erwin Zucker, have copies?
Yes, and the entire story is absolutely true. I didn't embellish anything, but Erwin and the gang keep questioning that, and so he decided to call it a work of friction.
Well, have Erwin send me a copy ASAP.
Absolutely.
Oh, now I remember. I had met you Thursday. I didn't remember, but when you said it's a work of friction, I remember us talking about that.
Malcolm, he won one of the awards.
Right, but I didn't know what book it was when I was there.
You didn't put two and two together.
Listen, I had two glasses of wine. I don't know anything. But it's interesting. Maybe we'll get, actually, what we should do is get the three of you together in a room.
You know, I could easily see him writing a sequel about this.
Okay.
It sounds pretty perilous.
Now, how long has the book been out?
I get a second edition should be available within the next month or so.
All right, so it's moving slowly, but it's moving.
Do you have a website that people can access you or?
Yes, my name's David Bekel, D-A-V-I-D-B-E-A-K-E-L, and I'm on Facebook right now, and www.davidbekel.com, and but mainly on Facebook, and my webpage is undergoing some construction right now.
Uh-huh. Get on LinkedIn as well.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a business connections.
I'm just learning how to do a LinkedIn and a Twitter.
Yeah, that's the way to go. That's a new well. If you need some connections, we have a great gal working for us, Pam Blankensy, and she is the expert on the social media, social networks. And, you know, to me, it's all new. I know what I want. I tell her what to do, and she does it, or she tells me what to do. But she's excellent at it. If anybody's looking for a person to work with, a social media, this is the lady or the social networks.
Well, I'd like to meet her.
Well, we shall arrange it. Paul, are you telling me to speed up?
We have a break coming up?
We don't have a break. Oh, okay. No, we have our next guest lined up.
Okay. One last question. Dave, where are you located in the L.A. area?
We're right in the heart of Hollywood at a Hollywood and Highlands.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, thanks very much.
Thank you, guys.
And, again, one day, in a little while, we'll have you come in studio so we can talk to you eyeball to eyeball.
Sounds wonderful.
Okay, thanks again.
All right, Dave, take care.
Thank you, guys.
Okay, now we have, who do we have as a guest? Who is she? Anna Weber.
Anna Weber. She comes originally from Romania, went to Israel, and then went to the U.S., so that she can realize the American dream.
What is the American dream? Anna, are you there?
Well, we'll have to ask her directly and find out.
Anna, are you there?
She's not only a public speaker, but she's also a lifestyle leadership coach. And her 17th book, the latest one is 360 Degrees of Success.
Anna, are you there?
Thank you.
Hi, how are you? This is Malcolm Berman, and the other voice you'll hear is Stan Weisleder.
And I'm in New York right now.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Anna, what is the American dream? People have been trying to define that for years.
I think the American dream is success, but not without happiness. Having the liberty of being happy and free and successful at the same time professionally, in your business, and in your personal life.
Uh-huh. Well, when you were in Romania, was that part of the that was part of the USSR, wasn't it?
Yes. When I was in Romania as a little girl, it was definitely under communism. And we lived, I actually had to share a bathroom with three other families, and we had to wait sometimes an hour or over an hour for a loaf of bread. So, yeah, so kind of describes you the lifestyle. Mm. So it was definitely not, there were no dreams at that time. There were hopes, but there were no dreams because, life was dictating
differently. But what about when you were in Israel? That's supposed to be a country where they also have democracy and you could do pretty much whatever you want, so I'm told.
Yes, actually in Israel I went to school there. We immigrated there when I was 10. And at 1967, I was 16 going on 17. Actually, I was 16. We were, we had a war. And then again in 1973, I was going through both wars. I came here after that war in 1973.
Did you serve in the military?
No, I got married instead. And then I went back to school. I had a baby. And the truth is that when we were in the shelter and in 1973, and I had a baby in my arms, and I could see him, he was so not at ease, and he was so upset about there was no light, it was kind of dark and cold. And he said, I just need to go back. He barely spoke a few words, and he said, I need to go back. And I understood what he said. And I think that kind of really ignited, not that it's a bad country or anything. I don't want to say anything really negative here. However, I just wanted to pursue more opportunities and freedom. And I just said, I want to raise my son where he doesn't, he's not in a shelter saying, I want to go back to my room, to play with my toys.
Did you live on a kibbutz when in Israel?
I actually, when we moved there, my mom didn't know the language, neither did I, and she really didn't have a profession. She grew up in an aristocratic family before the war, Second World War, and, she wasn't really accustomed to, it was a little different, than woman today, woman's lip. But anyhow, she wasn't able to support me. She did different work. She actually worked for a deli, basically catering, and I went to kibbutz, a farm kibbutz where kids were working part of the day and going to school part of the day. So obviously your work was making up for the schooling and for the room and board. And I was living in a dorm with three other little girls, and we were all from the age of 10 to 13. So it was quite an event, moving from a cultural and being with your mom and, you know, having your little room to a dorm at that age. It was really a huge life-changing event for me.
It's like my son's going to college now.
Yes. And you know what? In a college, we hope that the kids are mature to deal with that, you know, with that big change. But when you have 10 going on 11, it really feels very... You kind of, you know, you're looking for your mommy. You're looking for my parents.
But listen, before we forget, can you tell our listeners what your website is so they could look you up get copies of your books forth?
Sure. The website is www.360degreesofsuccess.com.
That's it. That's all they have to do to look that up.
Yes. Please,
okay.
And they welcome to reach out to me. It has all my contact information, toll-free numbers, and cell number, and email, and people.
And that will list all of your other books as well?
Well, yes. Well, if they Google me, they're going to see there's a moneyflowmastery.com website as well, and that's listing the Money Flow book as well, the previous book to the 360, and the Nothing's Lead You to Everything. But all my other books can be purchased on Amazon. They're all listed on Amazon and Barnes & Noble, so people can have access to all my books.
Right? Are any of them e-books?
Yes, we have e-books. We have audio-video books. The 360 is actually an audiobook as well that you can listen to and purchase it on Amazon. So there is, you know, technology you have to keep up so they can download it as an ebook, they can listen to it, and, you know, there's various forms, and there's also even in a hard, you can purchase it in a hardcover as well in paperback.
Anna, I have a question for you, which you can answer at the other end of our break. Do you think you have reached the American dream, and what are you doing? If not, what are you doing to pursue it? I'm going to leave you for you to think about it, and we're going to, when we return to The View from Over Here, we'll get an answer. You're listening to The View from Over Here on CRNTalk.com, and we'll be back in a few minutes, so stay tuned for Anna Weber to find out whether she ever reached the American dream.
The next time you're in Southern California, visit the Riviera Restaurant in Calabasas. Riviera, as the name implies, is the ultimate in Calabasas restaurants. There's not even a close second. And what's better suited for the Beverly Hills of the Valley than a Beverly Hills type of restaurant and watering hole without those ridiculous Beverly Hills prices? They're so good. With impeccable service, they probably don't even need this commercial. Even now, it's hard to get a good table except for off hours. But if you really want to treat yourself or your date, call 818-224-2163. That's 818-224-2163. That's the Riviera Restaurant in Calabasas, California.
Located in the heart of Maui's premier resort, Kaanapali Beach Hotel is officially recognized as Hawaii's most Hawaiian hotel and the number one best value in Hawaii. With a range of accommodations and affordable dining options, this is the ideal setting to turn Hawaiian dreams into lifelong memories. Live Hawaiian entertainment every evening, free year-round children's programs, weekly arts and crafts fairs, welcome breakfast, and departure kukui'ulei ceremonies add to the value. Swim in the whale-shaped pool, indulge in the fabulous spa and hotel salon. Enjoy Hawaiian hospitality at its best at the Kaanapali Beach Hotel. Call 800-262-8450 or go to kbhmaui.com. That's kbhmaui.com. Aloha.
Okay, back to New York. Stan?
Yes, we are in New York, or at least I am, while Malcolm is slaving away in Sunland.
And we have about 4 minutes left, so let's get to our guest, Anna Weber. Anna? Or Anna?
Yes, hi. It's
hi.
Anna. Yes, hi.
Yeah, that's my wife's name. I always tell her that her family was too poor to buy the second end, so it's only one end.
That's me.
Anyway.
Well, maybe she's related to Santa Anna.
Yeah, could be. Anyway, the question was, have you reached the American dream, and what do you feel that you have?
Yes, I have. I definitely have. I have reached my dream. I haven't completely fulfilled my purpose, and you know, something that I look forward to tomorrow. But mainly the dream, yes, I made some great personal choices. There's such a wonderful liberty in this country. It's filled with opportunities and various choices that we can make to be personally, professionally, and successful in business. So, yes, the answer is a big yes with big light. And what can I tell you? It took many years to get here. And the reason that I'm so passionate also about the 360 is because I want people to get there sooner than I have. It took many detours and various roads and challenges that I had to turn into opportunities personally for me. So I want to see people, college students and business owners and entrepreneurs and professionals, reach their personal and professional success much sooner than I have, and really reach that dream and feel that you're living the dream every single day.
But as I say, the goal may not be the important thing. It's the trip there.
It's the journey.
And you seem to have enjoyed the journey. But you mentioned one word, which I'm not sure what you meant by it. You said, what is your purpose? Or do you feel that you have a purpose?
Yes. My purpose is basically to share everything that I have experienced and everything that I know, and all the, you know, the hidden secrets and the formulas and the tips that I have for people to share with the world. Like I said, how to get there sooner and really enjoy the journey. That is the key. Enjoy while you get there. I tell people that life is like a vehicle. And when we are in the driver's seat, we can choose which direction to take and what successful stop destinations we're going to make along the way. But just be careful. Don't let that vehicle stall on you or go in reverse. You only go in reverse.
If there was one thing that you could say, only one thing that you could say to our listeners that they should do, what would that be?
With 30 seconds.
That would be don't give up, don't give in, but give more of yourself, and you will see that the rewards are amazing.
Well, thank you very much, Anna, and I hope people will live by that. And how would they contact you again, fast?
It's www.360degreesofsuccess.com.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Have a fabulous day.
Good you time. Too. And you've been listening to The View from here on crntalk.com. And next week we shall have some fabulous guests. Do we know who's coming next week?
It's a surprise.
It's a surprise, and maybe you'll get some of the people from the big city, New York. Anyway, guys,
That's what we're aiming for.
Are we going to have to do the Joe Franklin tape, or we don't know?
I'll bring that with me. I want to play with that. But we have an interesting one coming up in a couple of weeks, because I'll be attending the send-off for Sid Caesar.
And that is send-off. Okay, guys, thanks very much for joining us this week. And go to our website, www.viewfromoverhere, to get all the back shows and this week's show. And have a great week. Stan, have fun in New York. Be careful.
I will, Malcolm.
Don't do anything that I would.
Of course not.
And send my love to Marilyn.
Will do.
Okay, guys. See you next week. Bye-bye.
The View from Over Here is a co-production of Infinity X and TBG International. For further information, contact Malcolm Berman at 818-687-2784. That's 818-687-2784.